evolving hell. My dreary days have turned to playgrounds in oh so many ways. Right now I get to be my own boss, work my own hours, and I get to hang with this thought. Plenty of space to invigorate my soul and finally breathe. And I know, you know, and he knows, and she knows that it doesn't just fall on your plate. And to get what you want, see it through, it's your show. Go against the grain, don't emulate. She knows, and I know, and you know, and he knows that it doesn't just fall on your plate. And to get what you want, see it through, it's your show. Go against the grain, don't emulate.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have you along tonight, everybody. It's a big show for us, big show for this show, as we are at show 400. And I alluded to it last week that there would be some stuff we go back maybe and look at, maybe try and get some special guests in, but 400 shows. Who would have thought, again, who would have thought we would have got that far? In saying that, though, I went back and I looked through some of the archives, went through and looked at some of the information. We've done some big work here on this show. Not going to say that we're the best show out there. I mean, that would be narcissistic and a little crazy to claim that when there are certainly shows that have bigger funding, you know, bigger budgets, a lot more time to produce stuff. I mean, this is just a weekly show. I know that there are guys that do this daily, and they certainly deserve some kudos for doing that. But I want to go over a few of the names that we've had on this show before we get into some of the highlights that I some of the funny conversations that I've had with some of the people that that I know about. We're talking about pro hockey players. We've had a few pro hockey players come on the show. Names like Brian McGrattan, Jared Allen, Brandon Reed, Ted Irvin, Andrew Lowen, Brad Lukowich, Theron Fleury, Terry Ryan, Warren Skordinsky, Billy Bridges, Josh Green, guys that are phenomenal in terms of just making the game better. We've had them on, had a lot of fun with them. We've had a lot of people that kind of fill in from the media, that fill in from, you know, written TV, all sorts of sports stuff that way. People like, again, Dave Hodge, who we had on recently. Obviously, Kelly Rudy, who we had on recently, former player as well. But again, people that you might forget about. People like Jessica Scott Reed, Rob Allman, Paul Lucas from ESPN, well, formerly of ESPN, Tal Pinchevsky, Jeremy Allingham, James Duffy, Al Strachan, Grant Lawrence, Scott Billick, Murat Atesh. All these people who do outstanding work, Cassie Harish, who has a great radio show now in London, Ontario. All these people that you forget about that were on this show that simply made it better, that brought their own perspectives and told their stories about hockey. Cannot thank those people enough as well. Obviously, some media people we've had on, Jared Kiso, Nathan Dales, Tyler Johnson, Dylan Playfair from the hit show Letterkenny have been on repeatedly. I know they're busy doing other stuff right now, but we've had them on a number of times as well. Heather Neal, who was the costume designer for the movie Goon, we had her on. Happy to have had her on. That was fun to talk to her. But we've had some special people on as well. Some people whose hockey tie-ins are a little bit different, but not certainly not different in that they have their own stories. People, you know, who come to us and tell us great things. People like Dwayne Green of the True North Foundation, who talked about some of the stuff that the True North Foundation does. Ryan Bailey of Hockey Helps the Homeless, talking about how much work they do for helping the homeless. John Corallo from The Coop, the guys who designed all of Don Cherry's clothing for TV, for Hockey Night in Canada. You might remember Alex Delaloy and her brother Hayden Delaloy. Alex was the young girl who had cancer at the Jets game. We had her on and talked to her a little bit. Bob and Linda McPherson, who we talked to way back when. If you go through the archives on Hockey Blog in Canada, you can find that interview about their son, Duncan, who was a New York Islander prospect, New York Islander pick. Their son, Duncan, who disappeared in Europe, and they've never found his body. Kind of a very different show for that one, as we talked to those, Duncan's parents and Bob and Linda, and got to know them a little bit. But yeah, still no discovery of Duncan's body at this point, which is kind of crazy. We've had a few you know, a few officials on that wanted to talk to us about being wearing the stripes every night. Jeremy Gauvin, who's a regular on the show, has been on a number of times. Amy Martin, who gave us a really good interview and told us a little bit about her. And then, of course, we had professional Ryan Galloway on and his wife, Rhonda Galloway, who Rhonda is an outstanding artist and great, great supporter of hockey, obviously, with her husband being an NHL linesman. But, yeah, great to talk to some of the people that way. And then, of course, we've had, you know, virtually every Bison women's hockey player on, because we have a tight bond with that team. Had some of the men on as well in terms of getting them on: Steve Christie, Dane Crowley, Jeremy Schappert, most notably in terms of getting them on a few years ago. But the women, I've talked repeatedly on the show about how we support women's hockey and how the show supports women's hockey and how we're never going to really give up that fight. That this is an important part of hockey now, that we need to realize that there are some extremely talented women out there that should be recognized for their efforts. And this list is, I didn't realize we had talked to this many people, but this list is ridiculous. And this has no Bisons on it. That's the thing. There are no Bisons in this, just players who have played elsewhere or who have grown up in Manitoba and gone on to bigger and better things. Here is a list of the names, and I'll run through this as quickly as I can, because I think this is ridiculously good that we have. And again, I was shocked when I was going through the archives about how many people we talked to. So let's start with this: Sammy Joe Small, Delaney Bryan, Hallie Krzaniak, Kaylee Wickenheiser, Janine Weber, Alicia Anderson, Kelsey Newman, Jetta Ratcliffe, Isabel Germain, Carly Jackson, Autumn McDougal, Lindsay McAlpine, most recently, Kareen Sandilands, Chiara Esposito, Reagan Bolton, Julianne Thompson, Taylor Woods, Melissa Ronsberg, Jessica Vance, Kenesha Misswagon, Katie Bassett, Michaela Grodnichuk, Janelle Kohanchuk, Tony Ross, Alexis Mode, Candace Stiles, Fielding Montgomery, Amanda Claussen, Megan Myers, Kristen Campbell, who from the UND program, who transferred to Wisconsin. We got to talk to her over the summer. Sally Taraba, Alex and Paige MacArthur. There are so many women's hockey players that we've spoken to that aren't Bisons that are on that list. And I just go, each one of them has a unique story about how they got into hockey, what hockey means to them, this is what this show is about. We've done 400 of these episodes talking to people about what this show, basically what this show's entire premise is. And that's, how'd you get into hockey? Why do you love hockey? What does hockey mean to you? And we get different stories each and every time we're on with a guest. And that's the key. And you're going to hear a few of those favorite moments tonight. I got a few of them picked out where we had some laughs and got to meet some people that, provided us with a couple of chuckles in terms of some of their stories. Some of the people who had some very serious topics to discuss as well. So I'll play a few highlights from that, from those clips in a second here. In saying that, folks, I want to thank you. Come right out front and say it. Thank you for supporting us through 400 shows. Thank you for listening for 400 shows. Even if you haven't listened to all 400 shows, thank you for listening for whatever, to however many you can and however many you want. I am grateful. I know, you know, Beans and TJ and Columbus and Jason Pajak and all the guys that we've had on co-hosting with us. We appreciate the thoughts. The listenership that we do have, the thoughts that people provide to us via tweet, via email, via whatever. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for making a difference. Thank you for hearing these players and these people's stories. Thank you for listening just to our ranting, you know, on a weekly basis. We can't say thank you enough. We'd be nowhere without the fans. And if you want, if you can, this is going to be a bit of a plea now, but obviously, we're hoping that we get back into the studio soon. As you know, social distancing still underway at the university. We're not allowed back onto the campus premises until August 31st, so it's going to be a long time coming. If you have any, if you can spare, if you have a chance to spare, if you really enjoy some of the programming we do here at UMFM, donate to the station. You can get a tax receipt for it. I don't know if there's going to be a pledge-o-rama this year. I'll be honest with you, with everybody. I don't know what it's going to look like when we get back to the studio. I don't know what the rules are going to be. Pledge-o-rama might be a bit of a touchy subject, because we usually have people in and out and working around everybody and whatever. So I'm not going to say that we're going to have a Pledgerama this year, which means that your donations are even more important now. I know we ask for donations during that pledge week, and we try and raise X number of dollars, usually somewhere around $35,000. But at this moment, at this time, we certainly could use that support right now, because we don't know what's going to happen. And we don't know how we're going to make any, you know, if we're going to be allowed to make any money, if we're going to be allowed to get back in the studio, record ads, get some ads produced for, if there's going to be companies that can afford to buy ad space as well on the radio. So we can use your support. If you have a little bit of cash that you want to toss this way, hey, get in touch with Jared, get in touch with Michael through the UMFM page, umfm.com. There's people like me who will record advertisements for you from home. If you want to get an ad out there, you want to get something out there, let us know. We'll put it out there for you. So, but I do want to say thank you. Thank you for your support of the station. Thank you for the support of the show. Thank you for support of the other programs that are on UMFM, because we enjoy doing it and we're happy to provide you guys a little entertainment. So thank you for everybody, you know, for getting us through to show 400. Again, I didn't think we'd be this far. I didn't think it would come this far, but we're 400 shows in. We've met a ton of great people. We've done virtually interviews with every single Bison women's hockey player that's played in the last six years, I guess. We've met some incredible writers, performers or artists, some people who make the game better with their performances in some of the pros that we've met, some of the women that have done amazing things both at the collegiate and the university and the professional levels, so the Olympic levels, that kind of stuff. With, you know, thinking about Venla Hovi, thank you for making this fun for us. In saying that, though, I want to go over a few of the highlights. We got a special interview at the end of the show. I'm going to bring up, and we'll talk to this lady at the end of the show, because she's got some really cool stuff that's going on this weekend that you're going to want to tune into. But let's go through a few of the highlights, the things that I really enjoyed. I'm going to start with a guy that was on the show earlier in our career. December 18th, 2014, we had a gentleman on by the name of Sean Pronger. Now, Sean Pronger, you might recognize, former Manitoba Moose, former NHL player. And Sean has a story about his time with the New York Rangers that made me laugh pretty well. So here is Sean Pronger talking about his time with the New York Rangers.
Pittsburgh traded you to New York, where you rubbed elbows with some legendary players, Richter, Leach, Graves, and of course, the great one, Mr. Wayne Gretzky. People don't know this. Apparently, I found it to be one of the funniest stories in the book by far. Can you explain the red jersey, what it meant, and how it nearly killed you the day you found it?
Right. Well, the red jersey means a lot of different things and a lot of different sports.
Right, yes.
Right, so, but for the New York Rangers at that time, the red jersey meant you're on the first line, and that also meant that you were on Gretzky's line. So, and I was on the yellow jersey, which meant the fifth line, or it wasn't even a line, it was like me and Darren Langdon, that was the line. So, we were the yellow line. It was me, Darren Langdon, and Lance Armstrong were Team Yellow. And so we would, come to the rink, and you just kind of get used to being the spare part. Well, I show up at the rink feeling less than 100%, and there's a red jersey in my stall. And I grabbed it and went to the trainer and said, "Hey, dude, you gave me the wrong jersey." And I chewed at him. And he grabbed it and threw it back in my face. He's like, "No, I didn't." I'm like, "Wait, Gretzky's wears the red, right?" He's like, "Yeah." I go, "Yeah, why am I having the red?" And he's like, "Because you're going to practice with Gretzky today." And then my heart went in my throat, because I had a late night that night earlier, because I thought, you know, my buddies live in New York. I'm out. Let's go out tonight. So we took it a little bit deeper than I would have liked.
Few wobbly pops. Anyway, got
home in the wee hours of the morning, and figured I could just kind of fake my way through with my fifth line duties, and then I get the grenade dropped in my lap that, "Hey, you're practicing with Gretzky." And, so I had to fess up to Gretz that I was feeling less than 100%, and he was awesome. He's like, "Hey, don't worry about it, Sean." Actually, no, he's like, "Don't worry about Prongs. I've been there myself." And I was like, "Oh, my God, this guy knows my name." And so he proceeded to just make me look like a complete joker on the ice, because he kept throwing every pass over me. Because I was actually playing, I'm left-handed, I was playing the right side, so I got to catch everything on my backhand.
Backhand, yeah.
I'm hungover, and I'm getting wobbly passes from Gretzky that are, like, literally blowing up off my stick in the stands. So it was not what I had envisioned being. You know, in my head, in my heart of hearts, I was thinking, what if we just clicked? What if he loved practicing so much that he went to Muckler and said, John, you got to have this kid on my line. And we would have rode off into the sunset. It would have been great. But alas, that was the last time I practiced with him.
That's all right, though. Like I said, it's a great – if you pick up the book, Journeyman, great, great piece in there about that. It's hilarious. Highly recommend that for sure.
So there's Sean Pronger talking about one of the stories found in his book, Journeyman. I highly recommend getting that book. It's a fantastic look at what his career was like. He had a great career in terms of the way he played and certainly some of the experiences he had as well. The next one I want to bring up will be from a gentleman that a lot of people know from his work on TSN. On November 5th, 2015, we had a chance to talk to James Duthie. And I want to bring this up because he has some really strong ties to the city of Winnipeg when it comes to some of the people he's worked with. He got beat out by a few people when it came to his job at TSN by a couple of Winnipeg people. But talks really, really nicely about a few people that spent some time in Winnipeg, most notably Jay Onwright, Derek Taylor, and of course Matt Dunnigan, the former Winnipeg Blue Bombers quarterback, where he has a funny story about that. So here is James Duthie from our November 5th, 2015 show, talking about all the people in Winnipeg that he's had experiences with on TSN.
Your attempts to get on TSN kind of have you heavily involved with the Winnipeg journalism scene. And I say that in that you missed out on TSN the first time because of a woman who had pretty strong ties to Winnipeg and Lisa Bowes, who got the anchor job. Ironically, after that, a pile of Winnipeggers and personalities on SportsCenter and TSN have immigrated from Winnipeg to Toronto for TSN work, including Rod Black, Darren Drager, Corey Warren, Jay Onwright, most recently the aforementioned Derek Taylor. Is Winnipeg's journalism scene sort of a farm team to Toronto's sports journalism scene at this point?
I think so. I mean, Blackie beat me there, I think.
Yes, yeah.
He did CTV and everything first. Both Jay and Derek, when I first started at TSN, were on what we call the row. So the guys who cut the highlights every night, who are really the backbone of what we do at TSN,
okay,
are called the row, mainly because they sit in a row of chairs in front of monitors, and their job every night would be to, they'll get assigned one game or two games, and their job is to watch that game and make sure they know everything that happens and then cut a minute highlight pack of it. And so Jay, I think, was on maybe an internship from Ryerson, and I remember chatting with him, and couldn't have been a nicer guy, and I remember the highlights pack that he always gave were incredibly well written, and thinking, okay, this guy's going to be something in this business. And Taylor was probably one of my best buddies from the time I got there. Just I didn't hang out a ton with people there, but he was certainly one of the guys I did. And you know, when he finally went away to sort of pay his dues, and because you could get stuck at TSN and be on the road forever, and I knew he wanted to be on camera, so he went out to Alberta and Winnipeg, and I'm just so happy that he's back doing his thing because he's fantastic. So, yeah, I don't know, Winnipeg, you guys have a gift there.
There's another guy, and we'll talk about him in a second, who had ties. Actually, I'll ask a question now because it really doesn't matter. You eventually got back to TSN, and you got to work with a guy who had pretty strong Winnipeg ties in that he set a couple of CFL records here in Matt Dunnigan.
Right.
Outside the stories in your book, what's your favorite Matt Dunnigan moment that you didn't really get a chance to report in the book?
I'm trying to think what's in the book. It's funny, I wrote this book, and then I'm literally the only guy I have not reread my book. So
yeah, people, that's all right.
These interviews, and people say, that story on page 64, and I'm going, oh, God, what the hell did I write about?
You talk about the hair and how you used to throw footballs and stuff at it.
Oh, yeah, right. I told the one about the suit where he was.
The suit, yes,
on.
Yes.
Can I tell that one anyway?
Yeah, sure, go ahead, yeah.
That's my favorite story because I know there's always, people always believe there's embellishment in storytelling, and I mean, I guess there might be a tiny bit in here, but I tried to make these stories the true stories because I hate stories that are pure BS. And this is a 100% true story that we were in makeup one time, and Maddie, we get suits. One of the many spoils of our job is we'll get free suits sent to us, and you get fitted for them, and then they send them to you. And so Maddie was trying on one of his new suits, and he slips it on, and I think I was in the makeup chair, and he said, James, does this look too tight? And I go, yeah, Maddie, it does look a little bit tight. So Maddie starts flexing really hard, and literally a little tear at the seam starts and goes right down the middle of his jacket and then his arms. And the jacket literally falls apart on him. Like, it literally split in half, and then the arms fell off just because he flexed. And that was when I knew, oh, man, I am dealing with some athletic specimen here. That's probably my favorite Matty story. One I didn't tell in the book was we in Ottawa one time, we were throwing around a football before the game, and I always wanted to catch, like, I consider myself a bit of a baller. And
yeah.
So I said, you know, Matty, throw me a couple of bombs. And he probably threw me like a 65-yard bomb, and like three in a row, and they were so hard. Like, you think of a bomb as, you know, floating up in the air, and you glide under it like Milt Stegel, and you're gone. He hit me. My chest was bruised from these three balls that went in off my chest. I didn't catch any one of them. I think he knocked me down with two of them, and that's when I realized I was a little farther away from being a professional football player than maybe I thought.
Well, there are some great stories about some Winnipeg people that we know very well here in this community, certainly for their work that they did here. You can find more stories like that from James Duthie's book, The Guy on the Left. Fantastic, fantastic book about his experiences in Canadian media and certainly his time at TSN as well. Going to do maybe two more, if I can, maybe one more, depending on what I can squeeze in here. We'll take a look at time here in a second. But definitely the next one I want to bring up is more of a serious topic. Jeremy Allingham, who we had on more recently, Jeremy joined us on October 31st, 2019, so not that long ago. But he was talking about the story of Stephen Peat, former NHLer, former tough guy Stephen Peat, and how he was struggling with mental illness. And I found his comments about how there's this wide gap between wanting help and getting help existing in the NHL, and certainly after players retire, to be really interesting from his perspective. So here's Jeremy Allingham talking about that from some of the comments and some of the stories that he had in his major book, Major Misconduct. Here is Jeremy talking about that chasm and a little bit about Stephen Peat as well.
I'm concerned only because you've talked to him a few times, obviously, over the course of writing the book and everything. I'm not asking for content of those conversations. There's some in Major Misconduct, but is Stephen doing okay? And I'm not looking for, you know, for an update on where he is and what he's doing. Just is he okay in terms of you still keeping in contact with him and still having conversations with him?
Yeah, we had a long stretch of silence after the climax of our meeting up after all those months of trying to meet up and trying to chase him down. So after that, I got a message from him that just kind of was a very brief two-sentence message, which was, thanks for talking to me, I'm doing okay. That was pretty shortly after the meeting, and then we didn't talk for a long time. And in the last 2 months, I've been reaching out to him just to say, hey, just so you know, this book is coming out. Can I get you a copy when it comes out? How are you? And I didn't get anything for a while, but then I did hear from him that he's, still alive and kicking in Metro Vancouver here.
Good.
I have to say, I don't have much more detail than that. Literally, I don't.
Yeah.
Just that he's responded to texts. Seems like he's doing okay, and I hope he is. I hope he's doing well, because he's a really good guy. And in the good moments, I talked to him was just like a buddy, you know, like just a guy that we'd be joking and laughing, and we both grew up in Langley, which. You know, so we know the bars and we know some of the people. And so he's just a good guy that I really do have a soft spot for. And I hope he's doing great.
Well, I mean, the way that you sort of leave off that sort of section with Steven, it kind of leaves that open-ended question of, is he going to be okay kind of set up? So I'm glad to hear that things are going okay for him. He's still answering texts and still responding. So that's
yeah,
a good
again,
sign.
Like,
so.
I would just caution to say, like, I have no idea mental health is like. I mean, it might still be really bad, but... He is around and responsive, so that's
right.
One thing.
Right? The fact that he's still on the right side of the ground is a huge accomplishment, simply because, again, we've heard about other guys that made other choices that didn't result in good things. So I'm happy to hear Steven's doing well in terms of at least, you know, answering texts and certainly responding to your questions anyway, which is good. So
for sure.
I gotta say, I mean, I read the Stephen Peat story that you did on the CBC website. It reached a lot of people, and certainly reached a lot of people that Pete threw punches against while playing hockey. That brotherhood that's talked about in the book a little bit by Dale Purinton, the brotherhood sort of amongst the enforcers, it seems, still exists, which is great. But in reading some of the responses about from the NHL and the NHL Alumni Association and possibly even the NHLPA in the book, in Major Misconduct, it seems like there's a wide chasm between we're here to help and we can only help if he wants it. I don't know how you bridge that gap. But do you feel that there maybe should be more done by these organizations to maybe help these players transition, not saying just enforcers, but all players, transition out of hockey and back into what we know as quote-unquote normal life?
Yeah, and so I'm not an expert on, like, addiction services and how they work and what's best and what's most progressive and things like that.
Right.
But from my own layman's perspective of having seen the reality of people suffering, living with addiction, like all these guys in the book at one point, and Steven, particularly in those moments, I mean, you know, I had multiple conversations with Glenn Healy, president of the NHL Alumni Association, and I heard it in his voice. He was very sincere, and I think he really does care.
Yeah.
And he promised me that if Steven wants help, he'll get whatever help he needs. And so in that moment, I'm going, okay, that's really good to hear. And it's good to hear someone who's genuine I can't know for sure, but like Glenn really in those moments sounded like he cared, and to the point where we're texting back and forth, oh, have you seen Steven? Like, he cared. I think that's pretty fair to say. But then I go and see Steven and I say, should we call Glenn? And he goes, no, they're going to take me. They're going to put me in a crazy house and I'm going to be away from my family. And I'm just not ready to do that right now. I'm like, okay, well, that's fair enough. That's up to you. But, and you know, obviously you can't have like these like addiction services or whatever, you know, running out and grabbing people out of their car, off the street and like throwing right. them in a car and taking them to the hospital.
Yeah,
like that's infringing on people's rights too. But to me, there has to be some level of outreach to make these things more effective. And yeah, maybe it's not like, hey, you're coming with us right now, but maybe it's just like, we got to go find this guy to have a conversation. We got to go out there with like a sheet of paper that says, if you call this number, someone will come to get you and we will take you there within 2 hours, you know, 2 hours or something like
yeah.
that. Like,
yep.
like I think there has to be some level of like meeting people where they're at, which, you know, I have done a lot of coverage of like the opioid crisis in Vancouver and across Canada. And that's the thing you always hear is like, we got to meet people where they're at. And I think saying to someone, help tier when you're ready to get it, that's not meeting someone where they're at. That's creating a set of obstacles and challenges for someone who's already in a position to not tackle the most basic obstacles in their life. So adding bureaucracy and kind of highfalutin ideas of, oh, am I ready to truly do the work to become sober? Like, those are tough concepts for people who are in their right mind. And if you're not, yeah. So I just do think there needs to be some sort of outreach in some capacity. Again, I don't know exactly what the best practice is for that, but it has to exist, because otherwise I think that's a bridge too far to just be like, hey, we're here for you, but you got to find us.
Yeah.
Because when I saw Steven in that moment in that Tim Hortons, when he was really struggling, like, I'll bet you if I said meet me across the street in 20 minutes, like, he couldn't have.
Right.
And that's not a judgment. That's just what was true.
Right.
And so if that's not possible, and he's sure as hell not going to be able to fill out 5 forms, get a ride to wherever he needs to go, or get on a plane, or, you know, whatever it is, like, just the logistics of it are unfair, let alone the mental fortitude it would take to like make that decision.
So we're just past the halfway mark of the show here, folks. We're going to shift gears a little bit now, because there's a big thing happening this weekend on Sportsnet on May 24th at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Manitoba time. You may have heard of the story of Hockey 24. It was a project that Scotiabank pitched back in November of 2019, where they wanted to capture all of the different hockey communities from across Canada, basically filming one day in the life of a hockey community or the hockey community across the nation. Really ambitious project, really, really amazing setup. They finally finished the documentary. It's going to air this Sunday, again, May 24th, on Sportsnet at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Manitoba Time, Central Time, anything you want to call it. I got a chance to sit down with Lisa Ferkel from Scotiabank, who is the director of hockey sponsorships for Scotiabank, who went through some of the information about this. And I got to say, I'm very impressed with what they're going to do with this. I hope you'll enjoy this. I give her a quick introduction and give you a little bit of background on her as well in this interview. But this is going to be, I think, a big thing. And especially in this time where we feel so separated, we feel so not together. Having this sort of community based, this sort of, hey, look at everybody from across this country documentary on Sportsnet, I think will make a big difference and certainly maybe return just a tiny piece of normalcy back to, you know, Canadians anyway, with a little bit of hockey from across this great nation. So here is the interview with Lisa Ferkel. Again, she's an amazing woman. I'm happy to have talked to her, and I'll be back to close out the show after this interview. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not often we get to talk to one of the real movers and shakers behind the scenes here in the hockey world, but today's guest certainly is one of those people. Her work over the last 12 years has seen some amazing things happen. She's fostered some great relationships, and her 8 years as a director of hockey sponsorships for Scotiabank has seen Scotiabank's involvement in hockey at the grassroots level, up to the NHL level, blossom into one of the premier partnerships with all levels of hockey. Beyond her work at Scotiabank, she's a sports fan, an athlete, and is visible at a number of great sporting events in and around the Toronto area and across this great nation. She was also named as one of the 5 to Watch Sports Award winners in 2017 for her work as Scotiabank sponsored its 1 millionth child in hockey that year. Today, we'll get to talk to our amazing guest about Hockey 24, an incredible documentary that Scotiabank put together and will air on Sportsnet on Sunday, May 24th at 7 p.m. Eastern, as the hockey show is proud, honored, privileged, humbled, and pleased to meet Miss Lisa Ferkel, Director of Hockey Sponsorships at Scotiabank. How are you, Lisa?
Thanks, Trevor. I'm doing well, all things considered. I can honestly say I've never been described as a mover and a shaker, but appreciate the warm welcome and lovely introduction. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no, I mean, like I said, we're honored to get everything, you know, to get meet one of the people who basically, you know, fostered relationships across this great country with, like I said, all levels of hockey. So it's great that way. I know, you know, we had a little chat about this just as a couple of seconds ago. How's self-isolation? How's the social distancing going for your job, basically, as the director of hockey sponsorship? Has it affected it at all?
Well, you know, our business is about relationships and obviously missing that in-person connection. But Scotiabank has been tremendous at supporting the entire team, whether it be through technology or incremental resources. So I feel very fortunate to work for an organization that is not only invested in hockey, but invested in its people and its customers. So things are going well, doing a lot of virtual meetings and making sure to stay in touch with my team and making sure that everyone feels supported. So overall, keep in perspective, everyone is safe and healthy on this end. So thank you for asking.
No, that's great. It's good to hear that everybody's doing well. So I do want to talk to you, though, about Hockey 24. It's going to be an outstanding presentation, I think, this Sunday on Sportsnet, and we'll get into that. Hugely ambitious project, I'll admit, from looking at everything that was going on. Where did the idea of something like this sort of come from? Where did it start?
Well, you described it very accurately. Our Hockey 24 documentary is definitely before attempted project about hockey, and you know, in partnership with our wonderful partners at The Mark, the documentary was really imagined, produced, and edited by them, and kudos to them. We knew it was ambitious and at times frustrating, but well worth the investment from a time resource standpoint. But it really was the brainchild of our partners at The Mark, and kudos to my team for investing all their hard work and time to make it what it is. We're very excited about Sunday.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, it looks like it's going to be a great presentation there on Sportsnet. Let's jump back then to Sunday, November 17th, 2019, when Scotiabank and The Mark opened its virtual doors anyway and allowed Canadians to send in submissions about a day in the life of community hockey, basically. How many submissions did Scotiabank ultimately receive in building this documentary?
There were thousands and thousands of submissions from we received from across Canada, coast to coast to coast. And that resulted in hundreds of hours of film, actually. I was lucky enough, or unlucky enough, I should say, to be at Mr. Darcy Tucker's house at 5 o'clock in the morning to begin shooting with his son, Kane, and tell his story about, you know, his father coaching him and now him having the opportunity to coach his son. So really that family connection. But it was a wonderful day spent. I got the feeling of being a real life hockey mom, spending the entire day at the rink and back and forth, making sure all the kids are fed and everything. So it was a lot of fun. And then, you know, the days thereafter to see all those thousands of submissions come in, I think, to be honest, we were just overwhelmed at how Canadians embraced the project.
So, I mean, one day in the life of hockey from all corners of this country sounds like just an amazing story to tell. Without giving too much away, without sort of, you know, broadcasting too much of what's going to be on it, where are some of the places that people will see in this film if they're, you know, they're sort of looking for their hometown?
Well, we have a number of locations. We've actually captured different stories from almost all provinces and territories. I think the only two that we didn't receive submissions from were the Yukon and Nunavut. So for you Manitobans, one specific story, you'll see Churchill. You'll see the story of the city of the community of Churchill and Project North, an organization we work with very closely, going out with Natalie Spooner and giving coaching and building a rink to ensure that kids up there could play hockey. And my team had got the opportunity to head up there and saw some polar bears. You'll also see Montreal. You'll see a Haitian gentleman bringing ball hockey to his community and winning world championship. You'll see every province from PEI to BC. There's hundreds of stories to be told, and I think Manitobans will be certainly curious about that Churchill story for sure, which is one of the features.
I was going to say, I mean, I was over on the Hockey 24 site, which is hockey24.film, and you do have some of the stories up. One of them is that story you were telling about Churchill is Olympian Natalie Spooner and former NHLer Jean Chabot both visited Churchill, Manitoba that day.
Correct.
Where they didn't have enough coaches and their rink couldn't make ice. I think it's a great story. I think the end result is fantastic. Did you get a chance to talk to Natalie and John about their experiences in northern Manitoba?
I didn't have a chance to speak with John, but I spoke with my team after, or Natalie, frankly, specifically about their excursion. But members of my team were there, and they were just completely overwhelmed by the sense of community and the way everyone just stepped up. And I think it speaks to the values that hockey teaches, whether it be inclusion, dedication, teamwork. Those are all examples of the kinds of things that help us as humans get through hard times like we're experiencing now and that are demonstrated in Hockey 24.
I mean, I'm glad you sort of brought up the community idea, because there's one other story that's on the Hockey 24 site, the hockey24.film site, that I think deserves a little bit of recognition, not only for the people in it, but for the program that's featured in it as well. The Reach Out program in Ottawa, Ontario allows lower income families to access the game of hockey, such as the Turkish Canadian family that's featured in the clip. I think that's one of the biggest complaints that we hear all too often in hockey, that it's too expensive. I know Scotiabank did a quick survey with FlipGive in October that said, quote, 41% of hockey parents spend between $5,000 and $10,000 a year, and, quote, nearly 90%, excuse me, are concerned about the impact hockey is having on family finances. I know Scotiabank does a ton of great work at the grassroots level to make hockey a little bit more accessible for everybody, but I have to ask, I mean, do you think hockey might be a bit too expensive in its current state?
You know, Trevor, Scotiabank is really committed to supporting every goal on and off the ice. Through our community hockey sponsorship program, which is a branch-led program, we give $1,000 to every branch to help support local minor hockey in their community. Through that program, we're proud to support 1 million kids and counting. And, you know, I think while there's obviously evidence and research that shows, you know, it is expensive, parents and children because of how much it means to Canadians and the values that it teaches. They're willing to make sacrifices and you know, to play the game. And we've just recently in the last year announced our partnership with Hockey Canada, you know, the governing body of our sport, our beloved sport. And, you know, we're working through other ways that we can help bring the game to more people and more Canadians, more kids across the country.
Yeah, I mean, I know that, you know, that sort of grant that you guys give out every year is huge for some of the minor hockey associations, especially, you know, in places where they can certainly use a little bit of help. So, I mean, I know we're thankful for that and thankful for Scotiabank's involvement at that point. In these uncertain times, though, and I mean, I think this is kind of cool about the you know, the movie itself, the documentary itself. It seems more important than ever to maybe to come together as a nation as we spend more time apart. Is that really the message that Hockey 24 conveys in the documentary, that no matter how far apart we are, we're all pretty much, you know, the same in terms of our love of hockey?
You know, our Scotiabank's Hockey 24 documentary isn't just a story about hockey. It's a story about humanity. So you're right. At a time which we would be watching the NHL playoffs on Sportsnet in any given year, we're releasing the film during these unprecedented times to help bring hockey back to television screens and to really highlight how the bonds developed through the sport help Canadians no matter what challenges we face. You know, typically the game brings people together on the ice. Hockey 24 is bringing people together through a viewing experience, but ultimately it is about hockey and humanity.
So I've been honored. I mean, and I will say this, it is an honor to be included in a couple of the Scotiabank Girls Hockey Weekends that you guys put on across this great nation, in a bunch of the great communities across this nation. The turnout is always fantastic. I'm always surprised at simply how many people come out and, you know, bring their daughters, bring their kids out to the rinks to participate in that. Is there a push from Scotiabank to continue to grow women's hockey more from the grassroots level through to the U Sports level through to like the pro and Olympic ranks?
I would say our partnerships, we are committed to growing the game through our partnerships, and we definitely play a role. I don't think that Scotiabank alone has a responsibility to grow the game, right, but we certainly, through our partnerships, have a commitment to grow the game. And that's why we're proud again to support over 1 million kids and counting through that program and through programs like you just mentioned, Scotiabank Girls Hockey Fest, which is a free all-day event led by our dear teammate, Cassie Campbell-Pascal. And, you know, it teaches girls on ice and off ice drills, but ultimately the power that the sport has to teach those unique values of teamwork and camaraderie and work ethic. And we're just proud to be a part of it.
So I'm going to, you know, focus a little bit more on your position now, because you started with Scotiabank 8 years ago, in terms of, you know, getting into the company and joining the team there. What does an average day look like for the director of hockey sponsorships at Scotiabank? Like what exactly do you do?
I'm smiling because I love that question. the honest answer is I love it so much because every day is different. There's no typical day for Lisa Ferkel or the hockey sponsorship team. We're doing anything from negotiating a renewal to a new deal to, you know, building up a new brand campaign to working with our product lines and product marketing partners to figure out how we can drive greater ROI for the bank through the game. I kicked off by saying it's a business about relationships and I'm proud of the relationships I've built, whether it be with our partners at the Winnipeg Jets, the NHL, Hockey Canada, or the community, you know, grassroots leagues and associations and teams, as well as the internal branch managers and regional folks. You know, we talked about before we began the interview our time in Kenora and for Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada, working with Sportsnet and that amazing program. I'm so fortunate to be in a role that I love and I'm passionate about. And the diversity and, you know, is what keeps it exciting and keeps me engaged. And I'm just really lucky. But there's no typical day, Trevor.
No, that's definitely going to keep you on your toes and certainly make things exciting each and every day going forward. I got to say, I didn't know until I was doing a little bit of the research. People actually got to meet you last year at Hockey Day in Canada. Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada, always a big day. You were out in Yellowknife and you were on TV actually with Ron McLean. Got to chat a little bit with him about your job and some of the stuff that you guys do. How great was that experience?
Oh, wow. You really did do your research. Yes, I'm not going to lie. That was a little nerve-wracking. That was my first national broadcast interview. And I felt very honored to be representing the bank on that broadcast. Ron has become a dear friend, so he kept me very grounded and right at home. But it's funny. I often get asked, too, about my favorite hockey memory. And Scotiabank and the game of hockey have afforded me so many great ones. But recently, I did reflect as this past year, 2020's iteration of Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada was definitely a fond one for me. Not only did I have the opportunity to be interviewed live on broadcast television and speak to Hockey 24, actually, but I had members of my family out with me. So my mom and my dad, I have four sisters, my youngest joined me, as well as one of my nephews, my eldest sister's nephew. So it was pretty special between those two things and having experiences like seeing the Northern Lights. The city of Yellowknife was so hospitable, and it truly was an incredible experience. Thank you for asking.
Oh, no. I mean, like I said, I was watching it, kind of going like, yeah, like sounds like you kind of got the full experience up there, which is kind of awesome. So, I mean, congratulations on A, making it up there, and B, being part of it. So that's fantastic. You don't have to break any news here, and I'm not going to force you to really reveal anything. Any decisions, any announcements on where the next Hockey Day in Canada might be going?
There's, you know, I like to tell people it's like an Olympic bid. You know, there's all these different communities that are vying for the opportunity to host. We try and be equitable in terms of our geographies. So I will tell you, it's not too far from you, if I can say that.
Yay, no, that's fine.
I kill me for that.
I was gonna say, I'm not, again, you don't have to break any news or anything or whatever. Just, I didn't know if there was anything in the works yet, but that's kind of awesome. So, I mean, I'll keep an eye on that. We were out in Kenora last time.
We typically announced during the Stanley Cup Finals. So let's hope that the commissioner and the NHL are able to bring us a playoffs amongst the COVID challenging times. But stay tuned for more.
Okay, sounds good. I mean, we'll keep an eye on that, and certainly any announcements that come out from both Scotiabank and from the NHL. We were out in Kenora a lot when it was out there, when Hockey Day in Canada was out there. We actually got to work with Sportsnet and we broadcast part of that. I mean, all these little communities that you sort of go into, I was at the Winkler one as well before Scotiabank got involved. Lot of great, great stories that come out of these little communities. Have there been any sort of highlighted stories or anything that sort of, you know, you've gone like that? That's why we do this. This is why we want to be involved.
That's a great question. We used to say that there was a weather curse on Hockey Day. We've been hit with a number of snowstorms where we either couldn't get in or couldn't get out. The cup has been stuck. But I would say it's twofold: the school visits and the old age home. So when you see the Stanley Cup and you see the alumni visit these two environments, the smiles on juxtaposing a 7-year-old little girl and a 93-year-old man, it's funny how it's very similar, and like just the joy that it seems to bring them, and the humbleness and that I conversely feel by having a small part of bringing that experience to people is pretty incredible. And selfishly, I will say, I talked about my family getting to come up with me to Yellowknife. My dad is actually, I think he's been with me to about 8 Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada's, and it's coming from a family of 5 girls. He's working for me that weekend. He's getting up at 6 a.m. driving Darcy and Lanny out to the rinks to participate in a clinic, or carrying their equipment, and it's really been special from a father-daughter bonding standpoint as well.
No, that's awesome. I mean, good on your dad for accepting a position, you know, working for his daughter. But I mean, just getting that sort of experience is fantastic. I know we talked about the communities across Canada, but I think one of the things about Hockey 24 that I really am curious about and certainly want to see, and I know that you guys did a good job, or your partners did a good job in making sure that this was highlighted as well, but the cultural communities as well, whether it be, you know, immigrant families or the LGBTQ community or, you know, the, sledge hockey community, the different hockey communities were highlighted within the film as well, from what I read. I mean, how big is that in terms of showing the solidarity and the close-knit, you know, sort of fabric of that, of this community, this hockey community that Scotiabank wants to present here?
It's funny. I love that question too, because, I said Hockey 24 is a story about humanity. There's inclusion, dedication, teamwork. The film includes a face-off pig, a penalty box dog, a goalie grandmother, parents with 18 children in hockey, trading PJs for pads, the one in a million prospect, inclusive hockey. We're super proud to showcase how hockey has the ability to, you know, transform and break down all barriers and bring people together.
So you guys partner with, the seven NHL teams across Canada. You guys are sort of known as Canada's Hockey Bank in terms of how things are branded. What are some of the things, you don't have to talk specifically about every community, but Winnipeg alone, what are some of the things that you guys do with the Jets that sort of, you know, helps the community out here in Winnipeg?
I personally love the Winnipeg Jets organization, from Norval Riddell to Mark Chipman, to other ownership with the Thompson family. They are a very special partner, and we're lucky to be a part of their family. A couple big programs that I'm particularly proud of, and I know the region's proud of, is our presenting sponsorship of the True North Gala every year, which all benefits go to the True North Foundation, and the work up at Camp Manitou. I would say that's particularly special, but also going back to our support of kids community hockey and the programs like Scotiabank Girls Hockey Fest or the Scotia Skater Program, which gives, you know, children the once in a lifetime opportunity to skate alongside their hockey heroes. I've been lucky enough to be a part of those whiteouts when we're in the playoff run, and it's truly a unique atmosphere like no other in Canada. So kudos to the Jets organization for all that they do.
I know you got a busy day today, Lisa, and I don't want to take up too much of your time here, so I'm not going to keep you for a lot longer, but I am excited for Sunday and obviously the debut of Hockey 24 on Sportsnet at 7 p.m. Eastern, but I want to give you a little bit of a soapbox. Is there anything you want to add, promote, recognize, you know, call out from your position as Director of Hockey Sponsorships before we let you go on your way?
I will just say that this is not a one-person job. I've got a wonderful team behind me, and wonderful leadership that supports us from the top down. We started off by talking about the ambitious nature of the project, but thank you to our partners at Sportsnet, and we have an encore presentation coming with French subtitles with TVA. So I would just say that as Canada's Hockey Bank, we love the game, but more importantly, we recognize the values that come from the sport, and Hockey 24 is a great articulation of that. So I hope everyone tunes in on Sunday, May 24th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and enjoy. I can't wait to see how Canadians embrace it.
Well, I can say, as a guy who lives in the community here in Winnipeg and certainly embraces some of the lower levels of hockey in terms of different things that go on within those levels, we're beyond thrilled to have, you know, Scotiabank come out whenever they can and certainly, you know, partner with some of the initiatives that's going on there. Happy to help promote this as well. So, if you're out there listening in Radio Land, tune into Rogers Sportsnet on Sunday, May 24th at 7 p.m. Eastern, at 6 p.m. here in Manitoba, to watch what one day looks like in the hockey community of this great nation. I'm excited to see this. I think it's going to be great. I'm looking forward to that extended version of the Churchill story as well, Lisa. So, this sounds like one of the best projects, I think, that, you know, anybody, I know we've had, you know, sports that's been showing like old games and stuff like that. I think that this project though, in terms of just sort of bringing everybody together though, might be the best sort of project that could be done in a time like this. And I want to thank you guys for it.
Well, thank you, Trevor. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you today. I've really enjoyed it.
Lisa, it's been an honor and a pleasure, and certainly, you know, don't hesitate to ever come back and talk to us about anything else that's going on with Scotiabank. Always glad to meet, you know, somebody who's fantastic, and obviously the director of hockey sponsorships at Scotiabank. You hold a fantastic title as well. And if I can borrow a line from Scotiabank, I want to thank you guys for showing us that, you know, as Canadians, we really truly are richer than we think.
Thank you.
So there is Lisa Ferkel, the director of hockey sponsorships at Scotiabank, talking a little bit about Hockey 24. Going to be a great film to check out this weekend. Highly recommend it. Again, Sunday, May 24th at 6 p.m. Manitoba time, 7 p.m. Eastern. It will air on Sportsnet. It's going to be a great look at you know, hockey from every corner of this great nation of ours. And really, so hopefully can bring a few people together, hopefully bring our country back together at a time where we have socially distanced for a very good reason. So hopefully, again, it'll bring that sort of sense of community back to everybody and get everybody back in the sense that we're not that different. We're not that far apart, despite, you know, maybe the distances between us from, you know, from BC to Nova Scotia to Nunavut to all these different places where hockey can be played. We're not that different here in Canada. We're not too far away from each other when it comes to that sense of community, that sense of belong when it comes to the game of hockey. So I want to thank Scotiabank for giving me the opportunity to talk to Lisa. Again, she's a fantastic woman and happy to have her as you know, doing the work that she's doing, and certainly, you know, endorsing some of the stuff that the NHL teams do across the country, as well as supporting grassroots hockey from you know, across this great nation with a lot of the money that they put out and help leagues and teams. With that, folks, we are going to get out of here again for another week. Show 400 in the books. We are done with show 400 now, folks. So let's keep going. Let's do another 400. In saying that, always be safe. Keep social distance. I know that the province opened up, you know, the opportunity to get together with 25 friends and 50 friends outside and all that yesterday. Stay home, be safe, continue to social distance. We have done so well here in Manitoba in terms of reducing flattening the curve and reducing the number of cases. Let's continue doing that. Let's continue being smart. If you have a mask, get a mask. If you don't have a mask, see if you can find one, see if you can get one somewhere. There are going to be more offers coming out through different organizations to get masks as well. If you can get one, you know, get one. But by all means, folks, stay home, be smart, be safe, do the right thing here, and let's get through this pandemic so we can get back to getting back to the rink and hanging out with friends and certainly seeing each other and talking to each other like we always do. With that, folks, we're out of here for another week. Stay tuned for Free Range Radio here on 101.5 UMFM with Skippy coming up next on this great radio station.